The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org. Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks so much for joining us at the Free Library of Philadelphia at home. My name is Andy Cahan, Director of Author Events. Today, we're excited to host some of the writers and illustrators of the new book, Finish the Fight, The Brave and Revolutionary Women Who Fought for the Right to Vote. The writers and illustrators are my friend Veronica Chambers, who should be familiar to our audience from her previous book events at the library, as well as her three previous interviews on our stage with the now immortal Toni Morrison. Veronica is the editor for Narrative Projects at the New York Times and a co-author of Finish the Fight. She joined the Times in 2018 as the lead editor of the Past Tense Project, which told stories using photographs unearthed from the paper's archives. Born in Panama and raised in Brooklyn, her other works include the critically acclaimed memoir, Mama's Girl, and the anthology Queen Bey, a celebration of the power and creativity of Beyoncé Knowles Carter, and the new children's book, Shirley Chisholm is a Verb. Jennifer Harlan is a member of the Special Projects team at the New York Times and a co-author of Finish the Fight. As a reporter on the Past Tense Project, she wrote about all sorts of overlooked histories from Private Eyes to roller derby with a focus on women's history. She also writes for the Times about books, board games, the opioid crisis, and the coronavirus pandemic. She is from Louisville, Kentucky, but currently calls Brooklyn home. Michelle Baker is a multidisciplinary artist from Detroit, Michigan. In addition to Finish the Fight, her illustrations have been published in several books, including Making Our Way Home, The Great Migration and the Black American Dream by Blair Imani, Shirley Chisholm is a Verb by Veronica Chambers, and the forthcoming Motherlode 100 Plus Women Who Made Hip Hop by Clover Hope, which comes out in February 2021. Steffi Walthall is a VA, Virginia-based illustrator, a sometimes comic artist and all-time storyteller that celebrates diversity in all forms. She loves working on character-centric stories, whether they are fictional or historical. In addition to Finish the Fight, her works include The Field Guide to the North American Teenager by Ben Phillip, 50 Fearless Women Who Made American History by Jennifer Bazett, and The Story of Martin Luther King Jr. by Christine Platt. We're so pleased to have all of you with us today. Veronica, the screen is all yours.
Thank you so much, Andy. I'm so excited to be sharing this digital stage with these amazing women just a few days before Election Day, one of the most important elections of our lifetime. And for the last year, the four of us, along with some other women, have been working on a book about suffrage. It's called Finish the Fight, and it's about the brave and revolutionary women who fought for the right to vote. And the cover was done by Steffi Walthall. And so, Steffi, I'd love for you to talk about how you got involved. Tell us about the women on the cover and how you did it. And also, if you can share that process video, I would love it, because I'm not an artist, but I dream about it sometimes.
Thanks. So I guess I'll share my screen right now.
Also, while Steph is sharing her screen, please feel free to start dropping questions in the Q&A, and we'll definitely save time at the end for questions. So thank you.
So I'm playing the video without sound and talk over it, if that's okay. But basically, I firstly got asked to do this project by HMH. Initially, I was asked to do only an interior illustration, but then they saw something else I had done at the beginning of this year, which is wild. And they were just like, oh, like, can you also do the cover? Which is just like, yeah, sure. With all these other amazing artists, yes. But we went through about three different rounds. I'm looking at the file right now. We went through three different covers, sketches, And then we finally settled on this one. The main theme was like girl gang. And it was like, these are the girls that you want to like hang out with, because like in history, they were so like, just, they were so cool, firstly. And they were just in general, so impactful. And they all had like such strong personalities, and we were really trying to get that across and like modernize them while also like keeping true to the fact that they were, you know, historical figures. So basically this process for you is me trying to figure out how to draw for, you know, a million years, but fortunately Procreate speeds up everything, so it doesn't look like it took as long as it actually did. And I was also doing this while doing a different interior illustration, but from left to right we have Sikala Sah, and then you have Jovita Idar, Angelina Well Grimke, and Mabel Peng Ha Lee. And I just thought that these, and of course Francis, who was the person that I ended up doing in for my portrait. And it was just really like a moment to like really like play around with like texture, and like just focus on like making them look like they were really, I don't know what a good word is, like just really united, because even they didn't necessarily all interact with each other at the same time, they were definitely contemporaries, and they definitely would have supported each other because they were all fighting for the same thing, which was, you know, the advancement of women in general, but especially colored women, and their rights.
I think that's something, yeah. I mean, it's, I have so many questions for you, but one of the things that I thought that you did so well is that, you know, it took over 100 years for women to get the right to vote. This is something Jen and I talk about all the time, and anyone on the panel should feel free to jump in. So, for example, the famous Seneca Falls Convention, only one woman who was there lived to vote in 1920 when women got the vote. She was a teenager when the fight to suffrage started, and she was an old woman when women got the vote. And so one of the things we tried to do was think about how do we talk about these women whose lives overlapped, and they had a common cause, but they might not have lived necessarily at the same time. And I think your cover so beautifully brings together the idea that social change and movement is something that you lean on the work of other people, even if you're not physically leaning on them the way the women are in the cover. So yeah. I think it's just a beautiful, subtle thing that you do in the cover that that really speaks to how change happens in the country and in the world. So I love that. And also, you went through the video so fast, but there were so many little notes like, are hands hard to draw? Can both you and Rochelle answer that?
Rochelle.
You guys look at me like, yeah, obviously.
You can see her just nodding. She's just like, yeah. Rochelle, please.
Fingers are my nemesis. Oh my fingers and feet are my nemesis.
Oh my god. Feet are the worst.
I get there and I'm just like, can they just have their hands behind their backs? Like, is that okay?
I think that in some of my really early sketches, I'd have to like look, but no, in most of them, like hands. There was like only like one person that had like hands like visible, and then Whitney, who was the art director for the cover, and I want to say for the book overall, she was just like, can you like make it so that like some of the people, because like Angelina was one person who like I was trying to incorporate her, but because I knew she was like the youngest person, well technically she wasn't, she was one of the youngest people, Mabel Peng Ha Lee was the youngest person in my cover. I don't know. She seemed like she would be like the smallest person. For some reason, when I was looking at like photos of her, was also like an interesting challenge because a lot of these women did not have a whole lot of documentation in terms of like photo. Yeah, Rochelle. Like, so just like trying to like figure out how to turn people's faces and make them still look same. But yeah,
Michelle, hands, you look like you want to jump into that.
Please.
I was gonna talk about it a little bit later, but I got I drew a portrait of Elizabeth Piper Ensley, and there is one photo of her documented, and it is in profile. So it's, it was super tough to try and figure out kind of if find other references of people that maybe had her same profile or kind of like make up details, which is always a little bit hard when you know, when you're trying to figure out reference, like, I don't know. I always try and do like a day's worth of image search before I give up on images, and it was just like, there's nothing. But yeah, well, I mean, it's really tough to like, you know.
I think that's something we ran across in the writing of the book too, is that we really wanted to try and highlight and focus some of these stories that tend to be overlooked and that don't get as much coverage. But the part of doing that means that there isn't a lot of research and documentation of these stories. And so it really does involve a fair amount of like detective work to try and look for clues and ways that you can piece together these stories that that haven't been written about as much before, so that we can tell them now.
Yeah, I think there's a whole thing, because both Jen and I spent a lot of time in these archival projects, and you know, women of color are really noticeably absent from the archives at the time when even someone super famous like Ida B. Wells was living. She wasn't being covered to the extent that a Susan B. Anthony was. And so there aren't as many photographs, there aren't as many personal diaries and writing and all of that. And then even when you get down to like a Mary Church Terrell or Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, there's even less. So it's interesting, because I felt like, you know, I think we all, as writers and illustrators, know the horror of deadlines. And I think for me, when Jen and Nick and all these other writers that we were working with, when we were under the pressure, part of what I felt kind of kept me going was the idea that we are extending the archive by like retelling stories, by drawing together the little bit that's there and publishing it new. We're saying, okay, these stories are important and they need to like keep moving forward, and we have to keep telling them. And that way, you know, I had sort of a, you know, clutch the pearls moment when Kamala Harris mentioned Mary Church Terrell in her acceptance speech. And she's a woman of color suffragist that like literally so few people I know had ever heard of her. And so the fact that we've been like calling her name for months now in the making of this book, and then to hear it on a stage like that was really powerful. And I just think that that's part of the benefit and the joy of the work that we're doing. So I wanted to ask you, Steph, too, in that video you said, line drawing. So is line drawing relaxing if hands are hard?
Like line
work? Tell us about some of the notes that you made.
Okay. Wow. I made that video some time ago, but I like can't remember what was in it. I'm not gonna lie. But line work for me in general is really relaxing. I'm currently working on something right now. I'm like doing the lines, because it's sort of just like, by the time that you're doing the line work, usually you will have like figured out everything that needed to be done with the sketch. So like you figure out, and I see you, Rochelle, you're agreeing with me, you know what I'm talking about. You have like the formation. It's sort of like an equivalent to like writing, maybe. It's like you have outline done, and you have all of your notes and all of your citations and annotations like just are out there. You have like all of the like, you know, like major points like mapped out, and you know exactly what you're gonna say, and you just sort of like hit this really meditative like pace, I guess, with it. For me at least, like in line work is just something that like I can sort of just do whatever I want. You like have to focus on a bunch of different things like line weight and like thinness and like where lines are gonna go. that like attributes so much to your style, I guess, for me, because my work is like more line focused. And it's so interesting because I've been doing a lot of kid lit recently, and kid lit, that my style for that isn't super line based. So it's a little bit difficult. You can cover up things with lines, like you can cover up mistakes a lot of times. So for me, line weight is like easy, but figuring out like the things that are wrong. Like I drew hands like over and over like 15 different times, like that one hand that's on Mabel Lee's hand. I have the cover right here. I drew it like 16 different times, and I was just like, I like thing, but like I don't want to like get rid of it. I want to keep using it. So I don't know. Does that make sense? Does that answer
your question? It makes a lot of sense. Just before we go away from the cover, Jen, do you want to talk through how we chose the women on the cover? And just in case people don't know who all the women are, maybe tell us a little bit about them and some of their chapters.
Sure. Also, I can do a little show and tell with my my cover as well. So we really, part of what we were trying to do with the book was to really highlight and celebrate the diversity of the suffrage movement that brought together, as Veronica said, generations of American women from every walk of life, from Native women to immigrants who had just arrived here, people in big cities, small towns, all parts of the country. So we wanted to try and get as kind of as broad of a representation as we could on the cover. So Steffi kind of ran through them already, but on the right we have Zitkala Saw, who's representing Native women who fought for suffrage. And she's a good example, as are a lot of the women on this cover, of people who fought for suffrage, even though they themselves were not, would not be included in 1920, which is also something that we really tried to convey with the book, that 1920 is a big milestone and millions of women get the right to vote. But the reason the book is called Finish the Fight is because that victory was not complete, and that that work to make sure that people like Zitkala, who are Native women, also women like Mabel, who I'll get to at the end, who are Chinese immigrants, still did not have the right to vote until years or even decades after 1920. And that fight for equal access to the ballot and equal treatment under the law continues to this day. And we have Jovita Idar to her right, who is a Mexican-American suffragist in Laredo, Texas. She's one of my favorites in the book. I think I'm biased because she was a journalist, which I am as well. She came from a family of journalists and activists. Her dad and her brothers and her ran a bunch of newspapers in Texas. And she really used the power of the press to speak out for equal treatment and rights for women, including voting rights, and also for better treatment for Mexican Americans. And she was pretty, if I can say bad, awesome is the word I've been saying in all of these panels where there might be children present. The Texas Rangers once were mad about an editorial that she had written criticizing the president, and they came to destroy her newsroom. They were gonna trash the printing press, rip up all the paper, smash the ink, and Jovita came and stood in the doorway, beautifully dressed in like her finest outfit, and stood them down until the Rangers gave up and turned around and left. Then in the middle, we have Angelina Wild Grimke, who, as you mentioned, is one of, when we visit her in the book, is one of the younger suffragists. She was a teen when she really, and like in her early 20s when she got involved with the suffrage movement. She was part of this community of Black suffragists in Washington, D.C. that included Mary Church Durrell, who Veronica mentioned, and is also one of the queer suffragists that we see really being a critical part of this movement. She and her her partner, Mary Burrell, were both heavily involved in the suffrage movement and the fight for women's rights. And Angelina was also a poet. So there are lots of very eloquent examples of her writing, both about the role of women in society and letters to the women who she was romantically involved with. And when you're talking about queer women, just like history of women of color, and particularly queer women of color, there isn't, as we said, a lot of concrete evidence. You kind of have to go on a little bit of a scavenger hunt and look for, they wouldn't have used the word my partner or my wife or gay or lesbian, but you read these letters and the way that she writes to people like Mary Burrell, there's clearly so much love there. And you see that across the suffrage movement and even women who were among the leaders of the woman, people like Carrie Chapman Catt, who really led the final fight for the 19th Amendment as the head of the National American Woman Suffrage Association, or NASA. You see that there was queer representation at all levels of the movement and throughout its history. Here we have Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, who's another, like Angelina, another writer suffragist. She was a poet and one of the first women, American women, to have a short story published. She was the child of free Blacks and who died when she was pretty young, and was raised by her uncle, who was an abolitionist, and he ran a school. And so she was surrounded by these very engaged people who, throughout her childhood, who were very smart and educated and also engaged in making America more just and more free. And when she was a teenager, she got a job working as basically a nanny for a family that ran a bookshop. So she would watch the kids day and then go sit in the shop at night and read as many books as she could and write things herself. And then she became a writer and a very prolific orator also, and traveled the United States and Canada giving speeches about abolition and also about suffrage. And then on the end, we have Mabel Pinkwell Lee. She immigrated to the United States when she was a child with her parents and settled in Chinatown in New York City, and joined the suffrage movement when she was a teenager. And when she was around 16, there's not a ton of documentation about when exactly she was born, so we don't know exactly how old she was, but definitely a teenager. She led a parade of thousands of women through the streets of New York on horseback, wearing a hat and a sash, and it was the biggest suffrage parade that the country had seen up until that time. And she gave speeches and wrote treatises and papers. She went to Columbia and eventually became the first Chinese woman to get a PhD in economics from Columbia. So even you see in her and in a lot of these women, especially women from the later part of suffrage, that their work didn't stop with the start or stop with the fight for the vote, and they continued to make strides and work to make this country more equal for all women. So that's our squad on the cover. It was very hard to narrow it down, but they were we thought they were a good representation of the amazing women who were featured in the book, and the many amazing women who fought for suffrage who don't get chapters in here.
And I thank you so much, Jen. And I think for all of us, we were thinking so much about how do you electrify the idea of voting? And you realize that these women had to fight for decades because people don't always want you to vote. You know what I mean? Like, the fact is just voting is power. And so, Michelle and I are so lucky. I got to do two books with her this year. And so I'm gonna give a little shout out to our Shirley Chisholm book. Shirley Chisholm is a verb, and Shirley Chisholm, of course, is the first Black woman to be in Congress, also one of the first women to make a credible run for president, the first Black person to make a credible run for president. So, Rochelle, I would love for you to talk about Elizabeth Piper Ensley, but then I would love for both you and Steph to talk about fashion in the illustration, because for all of these women in voting rights, they came seriously dressed. And you guys did such a great job, both Steph in the cover and Rochelle in your piece, and in Shirley Chisholm, in like dressing these heroines of voting rights. So if you could talk about that. And please feel free to drop questions into the queue and in the Zoom, and we'll be answering questions at the end. So Rochelle, over to you.
Yeah, so I got to draw Elizabeth Piper Ensley. And to be honest, when I was in school learning a lot about, you know, suffrage and about this time in history, or these times in history, I didn't really, you don't get to hear a lot about like Black, Brown, or women of color that in general that helped with the movement, and they were so important and did so much to not even be able to really take part. But they were, they were working for the greater good. And that's really great. So when I went into drawing Elizabeth, I didn't have much reference, as I said before, but I did a lot of like clothing research, and I also she loved where she lived. She loved Colorado, and I wanted to not only show how strong she was, and you know, I wanted to show how strong she was, and I also wanted to make it so that people could put themselves in her shoes a little bit. And with her, I guess with her outfit, I wanted to put a landscape of where she lived and what was important to her. And yeah, I guess that's how I went for it. So I did a little landscape up here and then a little town here.
I love that you put Colorado into her dress, because it's interesting. It's something we've been talking a lot about, is that oftentimes in like historical depictions, you often see Black people in urban areas, but mm-hmm. you don't see them in these natural settings where, of course, Black people are everywhere. And so to see her in Colorado, and to know that Colorado was one of the first states where women got the vote, and that a Black woman was key and instrumental in that, it ties her to like this idea of the like powerful West. And so I feel like that was such a clutch move. Steph, how did you choose the clothes for the cover of yours?
So
you've also got those cool gold pins on yours too.
Yeah, so it was a lot of it was obviously like research with Jovita and Zikala, like specifically I had to do some extra outside research for Zikala, because it was sort of just like, I don't want to include colors that like are particularly like incorrect. So I did some research on like indigenous like clothing from the same tribe that she was from, but like I really wanted to like, part of the cover itself, like part of the design, it was choosing which women. I had gotten a list of women to that I could choose from, which you and Jen, like, you know, came up with, so thank you for that. It was sort of just like, okay, so like this book has like a million people in it, pick like seven. It was just like, oh, okay, and it was narrowed down. Yeah, I really liked how Zikala was dressed, especially, and I thought that she was just super interesting because she has like a violin. Like that was like a big part of like her like work. It was like huge, and I just thought that she looked really cool, which sounds so like, I don't know, what a good word would be. I always forget words when I get very nervous, but I just thought that like the beading was really interesting, and the patterns I thought was really important, especially while like a lot of Indigenous people don't even like have access to certain things, that we needed to include someone on the cover. And for me, like in terms of representation, it's always incredibly important to like include people that like are not often seen. There was a cover I worked on recently where I had the choice of making one of the main characters like either a dark-skinned Southeast Asian like person or not, and that is like a really important thing. Like it's the same thing with the Angelina, like it was super important to include her because of queer representation. But they all had like really interesting clothes. Jovita, like it was either like she was wearing like a blouse and like a skirt, or she was wearing this. And then the pins, that was like a really big thing for the time period. Either you had the pins, you had the sash, that was like the three different colors, or you had the like the banner that said Votes for Women, and it was purple with the gold trim. And then with Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, which this is my illustration for her, she had this really iconic like outfit, like in like all the pictures of her, where she has that ruffled like front. And I thought that was a really cool, strong thing. She just looked like she would like mess you up, and like based off of her speeches, she would definitely mess you up. She literally said, man, she said, like, you white women speak of rights, and it was just like, girl, like, snatch the edges, and she said goodbye. I love her. I'm so excited that I got to work on those. But yeah, like, it was sort of just, like, it was less about the clothes as much as, like, establishing the posture for me, I think. Establishing that strength, and the clothes just, like, did the work to, like, amplify that. If that makes sense. Did I ramble? Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, that was great. I love that we're getting conjuring the 19th century activists snatching the edges, because, you know, it took a lot of work to get us all free. Let's not forget. And we're still doing
that. That's also it's something that, like, every time we, all the historians and people we talk to, one of the number one misconceptions about suffrage history that they wanted, hoped that we could help dispel, is that this is not some like dusty old history of a bunch of old women and big hats and big like frilly dresses and talking about stuff that is not relevant today. It is, these women staged the biggest political revolution in the history of the United States. And it was like, it was radical. This idea that women should have a voice and should have equal political power was incredibly radical at the time. And I think it's easy now to say, like, well, of course they were going to win. Of course it was going to happen. But they really did. They fought very hard and fiercely for it for a long time. And we should be celebrating them as heroes and as the revolutionaries that they were.
Do you want to talk about the trading cards and the board game that we made?
Sure. So part of this, what we were trying to do to make this history feel really relevant and engaging, especially for younger readers, is that we wanted to make it fun. And so we also wanted to try and really put you in these women's shoes, and so that you could feel just how uncertain it was and how long this fight was. And so part of that was that we made a board game. Veronica and I are both board game nerds and fans. And so to get to design one of our own, we're like, yes, you'll let us do that? Absolutely. And so we have this Votes for Women game, which is in the book. You can also download it from our publisher's website. We can drop that link in the chat. And the game really follows the last year of the suffrage battle. So women had been fighting for over 100 years for the right to vote, at the state level and also at the federal level. And then eventually in the summer of 1919, Congress finally passes the 19th Amendment, which says that the right to vote cannot be denied on the basis of sex. But that was not the end of the fight. In order for the amendment to become law, it still had to be ratified by 3/4 of the states, which at the time meant you needed 36 states to vote to pass it. And so this board game follows that year as various states voted, many to pass it, but also many states rejected it, and shows the obstacles that they encountered along the way as they were trying to really get this amendment over the finish line and establish in the Constitution for the entire United States that women should have the right to vote. And what I think is especially interesting about this is if when you get to the end of the year, by March 22nd of 1920, 35 states had ratified the amendment. So you only need one more to put it over the finish line. But there were 3 different states who had the opportunity to be the 36th state to clinch this victory for women's suffrage, and who voted no and who failed. So you have Mississippi on March 29th, Delaware on June 2nd, Louisiana on July 1st. If you think about that, the amount of times that the suffragists really got their hopes up that this could finally be it, this could be the day, and then to be disappointed. By the time you get to Tennessee in August, it's really, the stakes are just so high, and you're you're starting to get discouraged. You're thinking, is this ever actually going to happen? And even in Tennessee itself, up until the day of the vote, the polls and the votes, it was really down to the wire. It was pretty much tied. They didn't know which way it was gonna go. And there was one lawmaker in particular, his name was Harry Byrne, who was anti-suffrage. People in Nashville would wear yellow or red roses on their lapels to show if they were pro or anti-suffrage. Yellow was pro-suffrage, since yellow was one of the gold or yellow was one of the colors of the suffrage movement. And he had a red rose. He was an avowed anti-suffragist, but his mother was pro-suffrage. And Phoebe Byrne, his mom, sent him a letter that said, listen, you need to do what's right. Your mother is telling you, and you need to be on the right side of history and help Carrie Chapman Catt, who I mentioned earlier. She said, you need to help Mrs. Catt put the rat in ratification. And at the very last minute, he changed his vote and voted for the amendment, and that eventually tipped it and the amendment passed. And all the suffragists were dancing and cheering in the state legislature in Nashville, and the anti-suffragists were yelling and disappointed, and Harry just snuck out the back having made history, and then he was on his way. And so I think the game really helped show that it really speaks to this nature of activism and of making change in general, that you don't know when you're in the middle of it what is going to be the act that is going to change, and it can feel like you're just doing something very small and that you're not making progress, but it's this cumulative effort of all of these people working together over time. And it does also show that one person can make a difference. And then the other thing that Veronica mentioned, which you can also download, is that there are many women who were featured in this book, but there were so many women who were part of this movement. We couldn't write chapters on all of them, or this would have been an encyclopedia. It was 1,000 pages long. But we still wanted to give you the opportunity to learn about some more women. So we also have a trading card deck at the back that gives you little mini biographies and stories of some of the many, many, many women. And this is still, of course, an incomplete picture, because when you have a movement that spans over 100 years and touches every corner of a giant country, there are lots of women. And also important, I think, to remember that there were thousands of women who fought for suffrage who don't make it into the history books, and maybe they just marched in a suffrage parade in their little town or talked to their neighbor about suffrage or signed a petition, and they were an important part of this fight too. But so you can see some of the women in the back
we love doing the trading cards, and the trading cards and the board game are available to download for free, and I included the link in the chat, and we've also got some questions, and we'll go to questions in 2 minutes, but I just wanted to ask Steph and Rochelle, you guys, your work, you bring to life so many different figures, both imagined and real. Do you think of your art as a kind of activism? You know, I think that as journalists, we feel like we play a really important role in the stories that we tell, putting the truth out there. How is it for you all as artists? Do you feel that your work is an activism, or is there a way that activism inspires the work that you're doing?
I'll go first. I want to say yes. I feel like as artists, and especially as like Black women, who have grown up with like sort of limited, at least for me, like limited representation, any moment that we create something that is representing someone that looks like us, that acts like us, that feels like us, that is like a moment of it's a moment that we are like going against like the status quo, I guess. I think that the most important part about being an artist, and it's something that I know that I'm personally so blessed to be able to like say that this is my full-time job, that I get to create art that is representation for other people, for kids that are coming up after me. Like, I got to give this book to somebody to these two little girls that look just like me. And their mom reached out to me and was just like, thank you so much. Like, I'm so glad that, like, they get to see people that look like them in a book. And that is, like, such a big part of, like, helping someone to love themselves and to, like, also create empathy for other people and foster that. And I think that, like, any moment that we can, like, move towards that is a moment of activism, because it's just like, or at least it's fostering social change in some way. So yeah, Rochelle, please say something.
I 100% agree with you, but I've been asked this question before, and at first I thought about it, I'm like, is my work really, do I consider myself an activist when I think about my work? And it's tough because, you know, you think about activism and you think about like really doing hard work and really being out there talking to people, writing things and going all out. But like Steffi said, like even just creating, even being in a place where you can create, I know if it were, I mean, I don't want to say any other time, but there's times in history where I definitely would not be able to paint, wouldn't be able to draw, wouldn't be able to read, wouldn't be able to create stories on paper. Like, that wouldn't be something as a woman and as a Black woman that I would be able to do. So every day I wake up and I'm able to draw and I'm able to inspire somebody who maybe doesn't get to see themselves center stage at the forefront to do something and make something about themselves or about someone that looks like them. It just keeps going. And I feel like that's what activism really is. It's just like keeping that going, making people inspired to like change the world around them and change the world for people in the future and change the world for people right now, no matter what it is, even if it is just picking up a pencil, picking up a paintbrush, making a sculpture, doing something that brings that sparks something in someone else's mind or keeps you pushing personally to make things that you can find yourself in. If that makes sense. That's a lot.
Yeah. No. And, you know, there's so many things we could talk about. I'll just say this really quickly. This is an event for the Free Library, and I think the Free Library has been an amazing home for authors and illustrators. And Philadelphia has an amazing history of murals. And not too long ago, about a year and a half ago, I had the opportunity to interview Stacey Abrams. And she talked about that mural that went up in Georgia where when she was running for governor, it said vote. And then the artists went back after the election and added to the mural and it said, we voted. So they added a D and they added a we. And I thought, God, you know, like here's a piece of art that's like literally a living testimony to what is happening in the streets. And so I thought I'd jump into some of the questions. There's a question of what part of the design process challenged you most? Rochelle or Steph?
For me, it was like figuring out what elements were the most, how to make everything like stand out. I think that like the piece that like sort of like makes it like the most like prominent for me is my portrait of Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, because it was sort of just like, how do we show that she was like speaking out against the people that were at the forefront of this movement, and like that was white women, because it was just like, okay, how do we like show she was an outsider, because she was at that event in Seneca Falls and she did speak. And the thing is that's like another like really important like challenging part was like recognizing that like you didn't know who any of these women were in the first place. Sometimes like the one person that I knew out of everyone was actually probably like Ida B. Wells. She was maybe the most recognizable person. And then it was just like, why aren't we learning about any of these people? So it was important to like, firstly, like capture who they were, but then also to like be to like incorporate something that was just like, okay, but this is like this isn't just a portrait, this is just, this is what she said, like her words were more important than her face, and she would probably like stand by that also. So I've tried to make sure to incorporate parts of her speech into like my part. So
the toughest part about design for me was the lack of reference that I could find about her or of her. And also because of that, I had to kind of go around it and come up with a way where there is still a likeness to her, but also make it so that when you look at the portrait of her, it could be your auntie, it could be your mom, it could be your sister, it could be your cousin. And I wanted to make sure that she looked very determined and strong. And there's, you know, only like so many ways you can work it on a profile. So it's kind of like making sure that she's kind of looking in your direction, telling you like, you've got the right to vote, you've got the right to do this, you're a person, you're a citizen, and you deserve it. And that, I guess that was the toughest thing. Like the landscape was a little bit different than things that I usually draw. I'm very used to just drawing people and like patterns and stuff like that. But I, you know, making the strong scene and her strong face and her determination to see this through, trying to get that on just a profile was by far the hardest thing that I did, but I think it worked.
It did. It absolutely did. Thank you guys both so much. There's a question from the audience about, would you talk about how the suffrage fight is still going on today? And I think that's a really important one to address, is that, as Jen mentioned, you know, not every woman got the right to vote in 1920. And, you know, Native American women didn't get the right to vote till 1929 with the Snyder Act. The Asian American women couldn't vote till even later. And even though some Black women did vote, there's a beautiful, we found great archival photographs. And there's a beautiful photograph, I think they were actually in Virginia stuff, of these women who were teaching college. And they were the first Black, they were the first women, but they were a group of Black women who voted in 1920 and they went together. But all the poll taxes and the long lines and whether or not your vote was counted, all of that are things that we're still dealing with today. And there's a book that I would definitely recommend, which is Martha Jones, who's an amazing historian at Johns Hopkins. She has a book on Black women and voting rights that just came out called Vanguard, and it is amazing, and it is one of our sources. And we also have a whole reading selected bibliography in the back. And then one of the things that we did that I loved was that Jen mentioned Carrie Chapman Catt, who created the winning plan that got women the vote, the Road to 36, that kind of plan to bring states together in this national federal battle. And when Carrie Chapman Catt retired, she and her partner, she had a backyard in New York State, and she did what she called a suffrage forest. And she put a plaque on every tree of a woman who helped women get the vote. So what we did was, maybe Jen, you can read some of the names since I'm holding it up, but we drew our own suffrage forest at the end of the book, and we honored the historians who have been working on broadening the story of women and voting rights. So women like Martha Jones, Adele Logan Alexander, Elaine Weiss, Susan Ware has an amazing book called Why We March. And we just wanted to honor their work. And that's just one of the things that I think is about how we like to do things. We want to both like tell the stories we came to tell, but also lead you to other stories and other writers and other things so that you can keep going deeper on the subject.
I think the one thing I would add to that too is that the fight for the vote, we say a lot in the book and every time we talk about it, was never just about voting. It was about equality and power for women and in all areas of life. And there's so much of that fight has continued throughout the last 100 years when you look at things like the fight for the Equal Rights Amendment, at Title IX, and also at all of the fights to make this country more just and to make all Americans equal in the eyes of the law. So things like the civil rights movement, the fight for gay rights, disability rights, that all, to me, we see all of that as the legacy of the suffragists. And even in the ways that you see people marching in the streets, picketing outside the White House, wearing pins or carrying tote bags and showing your support for different causes. Those were all tactics that were honed by the suffragists in ways that their legacy continues in the fight for the same issues that they were fighting for.
There's so many questions. I'm trying to decide. There's a question of what was everyone's favorite part of working on this project? I know Steph and Rochelle, you both worked with Whitney, and then Jen, do you want to start, and then Steph, and then Rochelle?
I mean, I think my favorite part of the book was really discovering all of this history and all of these women who I didn't know about. Like Steffi, I had heard of maybe like three or four of the women who were part of the suffrage movement. Like, I'd heard of Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Ida B. Wells, but most of the women who are featured in this book, I knew nothing about before last November when we started working on it. And I say that as someone who is a big history nerd and loves learning about women's history and history in general. And so the fact that there was all of this, all of these stories that I wasn't aware of, as someone who does more than maybe the average person to seek it out because I'm interested in it, it like made me mad but also excited at the same time to share these stories. And I think that was part of what was hard about the book too. Like, my favorite part was discovering all these stories. My least favorite part was trying to narrow down which ones we were going to be able to feature and tell. But the more that we learned about this history and what these women did, the more excited we were to be able to share those stories with more people.
My favorite part of this book, honestly, and I promise I'm not trying to be funny, was like when it was done and I actually had my copy. It was just like, it's such a really weird feeling to see something that you worked on in your hands, but it was just like so wild just to be able to see everyone's work. There's so much work and so much love that was put into this book. And it's just like, it's so much more than just the four of us sitting here. It's every woman that worked on this book, and like finding out who they were at the beginning was amazing. Like being able to actually like look through and hold in your hands and like know that you contributed to something that's like so much bigger than yourself. My favorite part, I'm not gonna lie.
I should say that, yeah, Veronica and I are two of six authors on this book, and there were 12 illustrators total, all of whom were women. So like the suffrage movement, it really was a team effort.
I guess my favorite part, I have two favorite parts, if that's okay. My favorite part was getting to know more about women's suffrage and lesser known people that helped, lesser known women that really pushed it forward and made it happen. And also getting to work with such amazing artists, like get in to be featured. I remember seeing the list of people that worked on this book and I was just shrieking at Steffi on the cover, which every time I look at it, I find something tiny, like these hands, for example, right here. I don't know how she did it, but I love it. And also my friend Shama, who did the portrait of Ida B. Wells, who is probably one of my favorite artists on this planet. Amazing. But yeah, just getting to be a part of that. And yeah, it's an amazing book.
I do love the end part when you get it, like Steph said, and you realize how many, all of our little pieces all come together to do it. I think we could do one or two more questions. And Carol asked, did we have to leave any women out of the book? and what was our ultimate for inclusion. And Jen, I know you'll remember, there was literally a day, and I think about this all the time because our little team room is such a small conference room, and the amount of people that we would pack into it pre-COVID, I just can't even imagine. But there was a day when we had, there was a whiteboard in that room, and I think we had 50 names on there, and we had to pick maybe 10 to write chapters on, and that's kind of how we got into the trading cards, because we had such a hard time picking. But it was also really exciting to know that every time we put a name on the board, it was like our world was being expanded. Like Jen said, I'm someone who like loves history, has read so much stuff, and to think that there were dozens of women whose stories that I didn't yet know, that was really inspiring for me. Did you have any thoughts about how who we left out, Jen?
Oh man, there were so many. I mean, it's definitely, it's a good problem to have too many amazing women and amazing stories. But yeah, I also very vividly remember the whiteboard wall that was covered in names, and we did try to find ways to sneak them, as many of them in as we could, whether it was in the trading card or in some of the sidebars or in the timeline. And that's also why we've included a recommended reading list and also a incomplete but still very extensive bibliography, because we really hope that this book inspires other people like it inspired us to go find out more. This is just a taste of some of the women and some of the amazing history that is out there, and hopefully this is a jumping off point to go learn more and explore more of these women's stories.
Yeah, and I think we're practically at time, but I guess the one thing I would say, and maybe each of you after we can go, Rochelle, Steph, Jen, can talk about like what it means to, what you're thinking about going forward in an election year. I don't think we thought about the fact that we were publishing in an election year, but it was the 100th anniversary of women having the vote. The one thought that I keep having is that, and I know my math is going to be off, but basically President Obama was elected 148 years after Black men got the vote, and we're 100 years after women get the vote. And so I think about that a lot of the times, because I think the fact is that if women couldn't vote, we couldn't elect women to office in the same way. We couldn't imagine women holding the highest offices in the land. And so I just keep thinking that we have to keep voting. And I think about organizations like She Should Run. I think we have to keep voting and we have to keep running for office. And we have to keep finding ways to get in where we fit in, because women's leadership is so powerful and vibrant, and that's what this book is really about. So it's about this election, but it's about all the small elections, and it's about all the ways that we encourage people who are coming up to find a place to be inspired and go ahead and run and vote and keep the ball moving. So Rochelle, do you have any election eve-ish thoughts about any of these things?
I know it's been really taxing, like emotionally, for a lot of people, myself included, just thinking about anything that has to do with the election. So I won't say people should vote, obviously, but I just want people to take care of themselves, do something for yourself after or before, drink lots of water, keep yourself fed, and watch your favorite, maybe movie. Mine will be Pride and Prejudice 2005.
An excellent choice.
My main thing is that this election, it's more than, once again, it's more than us, not to be so serious. It's more than us, it's more than me, it's more than you, it's for every person that comes after us. That is every election, even if the outcome isn't necessarily what anyone is hoping for. We still have to keep going. We still have to finish this fight. for the people that are coming after us, for the kids that are growing up right now, depending on us. But also make sure to give yourself some grace, to, regardless of what ends up happening. Definitely watch me. Definitely just like hug the people that you can and love on everybody. Let's go vote and be safe. Wear a mask.
So I went and voted last night early, and I was standing in this very long line of people in Brooklyn, all there to cast their votes early. And it really hit home for me that we were all of these people who had come from very different walks of life who were doing this thing together to shape what our country is and what its future looks like. And thinking about all of the millions of people, most of whose names and faces I won't know, who have all contributed to my having this right and being able to go into that voting booth and make that choice. And it really just drives home that there's a Frances Allen Watkins Harper quote that I love, where she says, "We are all bound up together." And it is work that we do together and for each other to make this country live up to its promise to all of us. And that's the thought that I'm taking with me into the next days and weeks and months and years and forever.
Thank you. I think that we got to end on Frances Allen Watkins Harper. I love that quote too, the "we are all bound in this together." Thank you so much, Free Library, for hosting us. And thank you for everyone who tuned in and for everyone who'll watch it afterwards on YouTube or listen to it on the podcast. We loved making this book for you, and it was a real pleasure to be able to speak today with these amazing artists and illustrators and my colleague and friend, Jennifer Harlan. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.